Hey, guys.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, so I was looking back at the news of this week, and I was thinking it might be a good week to talk about how politicians have to make calculations when they're running for office, basically just like normal people do, but in a different setting.
Calculations? What do you mean?
Okay, so like we're recording today in the WPR State Capitol Bureau. It is roughly the size of a closet. There are three of us in here. We have a mic stand made out of a folding chair, some blue books, and a trash can. And John is blocking the door with a chair. Now, I would like to go out and get a drink of water because I am thirsty, but that would require moving all of this outside, playing some human Tetris, basically, and then putting it back. So I have made the calculation that I will go thirsty.
Oh, okay. So I see where you're going with this. Sort of like my husband and I are dog lovers, and we already had a golden retriever in our fairly small apartment. But this other golden retriever became available, and so we had to stop and think and make the calculation about whether we were going to get it or not.
Obviously, the answer is no. Those dogs are huge. You live in an apartment.
Nah, we got the dog. And now our couch is ruined.
Right. Okay.
I see. So you're saying that every decision a politician makes, just like a real person, has to weigh the pros and cons.
It's all calculation, man.
Well, this is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about political calculations.
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator. I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
And that thematically appropriate calculatory type music is the 1981 single from German electronic band Kraftwerk from their album Computer World, or from the German Computerwelt. I think it's highly appropriate here.
I feel like that should be your entrance music when you walk into the newsroom in the morning. Mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
That's fantastic.
Oh, John's here calculating.
On my pocket calculator,
which
was new technology in 1981, I presume.
Yeah, we still use the same stuff.
So what political stories do you feel like need looking at this week through the lens of calculations, risk-benefit analyses?
Well, I gotta say, given the news of the week, I hope we haven't made a poor calculation to try to talk about these in a lighthearted way, but we're gonna do our best here. Let's start with kind of an easy one first, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of Governor Walker's new ads. If you look at the rest of the Walker ads in this campaign, very similar theme. If they're a positive Walker ad, it's him like at a school or a manufacturing plant or on a Harley. You know, he's out there, out and about. If it's a negative Walker ad, it's like attacking Tony Evers about this one Middleton teacher case where the teacher looked at pornography, attacking Evers for not firing the teacher. So there was this ad that Walker released, though, that is completely different than those.
I feel like it needs a little bit of background information here.
It does. Set it up. Like, what? Describe this ad to somebody who has not seen it.
Well, apparently it harkens back to a television, like an educational television show called The Electric Company, which I'm too young to have ever watched, but there was a recurring bit where there is two faces in silhouette who say parts of words and then repeat the word together. Yeah. And so Governor Walker's ad has a man and a woman in silhouette repeating negative words about Tony Evers and then saying the words together.
Yeah, I'm old enough to have watched it, but it was a distant third for me in the Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, Electric Company mix. And what are they? So it's like they sound out Tony and
Tony.
Evers.
Yeah.
Evers.
And it's a bit jarring, isn't it?
It is. I mean, so obviously it's kind of like thematically different in terms of like the style of ad. I feel like the first time I saw it, my comment to Sean was like, I think people watching this at home are going to be more drawn into it than another kind of political ad because it is so different. It's all of a sudden your TV is going like beavers. Taxes.
Right. When I saw this, it kind of reminded me of an ad that Walker ran in 2014 when circumstances were a bit different then, but there were indications that his base, you know, the Republican voters were not all that motivated back in his 2014 reelection bid. And Walker, felt the need to get their attention. So mm-hmm. he was talking about the budget and, you know, when you're in a hole, stop digging. So how does he portray this on TV? It gets into a hole, like literally into a hole. And then he addresses the camera from the bottom of this hole. And I was thinking, that's going to be a meme, you know, in the future. And I still see it every now and then. But
I don't think I've seen that.
You might have and not thought anything of it.
Oh, but sure.
Like, yeah.
Another picture of the governor standing in a hole. I've seen those all the time.
Right, yeah. Okay, you probably haven't seen it. Yeah. But I remember, you know, thinking at the time, you know, he's got to know that looks a little unusual. Mm-hmm. He's the governor. He's in a hole, right? But mm-hmm. but he must have made a calculation that while some might think this looks unusual, I need to get people's attention. So I'm going to deliver this message from the bottom of a hole. I got to think that they know in the Walker campaign that this ad, obviously it's different than the rest of their ads. Mm-hmm. And it is jarring.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to mention, too, that it's not just different in terms of that style, but it is a different message. And I think that that's something that you sort of alluded to before. Like, the other ads were about happy things that he's done for the state or the teacher pornography case. This is about taxes. This is not something that he's done an ad on before,
right?
The Walker campaign. So it's a new style of ad, kind of attention grabbing, and it's a new thing to focus on for the Walker campaign.
So
do you think he's made the calculation that all of his campaign ads from now on should be throwbacks to children's education shows?
That would be, I am here for that.
Democrats could do like, they could do a riff on that too. Like Sesame Street used to be the finest street in all the world, but now it's full of potholes and we don't have enough revenue to take care of the
I feel like carrying out this metaphor, I think I could see the governor comparing Democrats to Oscar the Grouch.
I'd just vote for whoever works Cookie Monster in.
Right.
Now, to be clear, we don't know whether this gambit by the governor here is going to work. I mean, I'm just saying he made a calculation to try mm-hmm. something different. It could be that he is burning money every time that ad runs and it's not sinking in, or it could be that it sinks in. I mean, it'll actually probably be hard to quantify whether it worked.
Unless people are walking around with like the electric company, like the phrasing stuck in their head. I mean, it is very catchy, sort of how they're like, income,
pod,
income,
cast,
axes,
lo,
roll.
on.
Yeah, we get the idea, guys. Yes, we get
sorry,
the idea.
It's just
yeah.
so fun.
We have beaten this one to the ground here.
Yeah.
Well, okay. That was fun. Should we move on to a new calculation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
All right, so what's the next thing that politicians had to make a calculation about this week?
Well, this one's not lighthearted at all. But, I mean, you can't really talk about politics right now without talking about the Kavanaugh nomination, you know, the Brett mm-hmm. Kavanaugh nomination for Supreme Court and the hearings this week and the way that the political parties have responded to it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's kind of where I jump off on this calculation theme. We heard last week from Tammy Baldwin, you know, she was asked, what do you think about the allegations from Dr. Christine Blasey Ford? And so Tammy Baldwin, I mean, she is being asked to take a stand on this news, which is still relatively fresh. Tammy Baldwin's probably a no on this anyway, but she says those are credible allegations and we need to have the FBI needs to reopen its investigation into Judge Kavanaugh and we need to pause these hearings. So not a huge leap for Tammy Baldwin, but she has to think this stuff out and she has to weigh that against her race in Wisconsin, against where the rest of the Senate Democrats are around the U.S., and come up with a decision. And then Leah Vukmir at the time says, I think these are serious allegations, and I want to hear from both Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, and kind of leaves it there.
Mm-hmm.
But by Monday, it was a different story from Leah Vukmir. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was she saying by Monday about this stuff?
Well, by Monday, she had really gone, as I think a lot of Republicans across the country did, further to the right, further to sort of indignation and anger with Democrats for attempting to, they say, delay the hearings, obstruct the nominee, sort of tarnish his reputation.
Calling it a big smear campaign.
Right, exactly.
It just seemed like a very decided shift to the right mm-hmm. to me.
It went from, we need to, you know, we're taking this seriously, to this isn't serious at all.
To hashtag confirm Kavanaugh.
Right, right.
It happened pretty fast, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what she was saying was very much in line with what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was saying on the Senate floor, mm-hmm. like that day, I believe. So
it was a coordinated calculation, I think, by Republicans as a whole. And I think there were two other things that happened at the same time that this shift happened. The president tweeted in a way that he hadn't before about Dr. Ford, that was more directly critical of her. And then also these other accusations came out. The additional accusations against Kavanaugh. And I think that might have been kind of a breaking point for some Republicans, saying like, now they're piling on and these aren't credible and things like that.
So we don't know, but like, what could be the benefit as we think about the cost, the benefit of these decisions that they're forced to make? Why might Republicans decide to just go all in on this? What other factors are going into a potential calculation here?
Maybe like the elections, perhaps?
Yeah, but and specifically, we're seeing in polling in Wisconsin and elsewhere that the GOP base is not all that fired up right now. I mean, we know Wisconsin polling better than other polling.
Mm-hmm.
And here there's just a bit of an enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats. You know, we're not in a studio because that's the fridge.
the fridge just kicked off. Then
we have a special guest here on the podcast. It's the Capitol Bureau fridge.
Hey,
just wanted to weigh in.
could the fridge get its own theme song? Because that would be cool. Oh, thanks for the interlude there, Fridge. This is serious stuff, but we needed that levity. Thanks very much. Where were we?
The costs and benefits of...
So we know that like there's a little bit of an enthusiasm gap mm-hmm. from the GOP base, and they're looking for ways to fire them up.
To energize the base. And I think that this issue works for both bases, really. I mean, we know that... The Supreme Court is an issue that has energized voters in the past. They understand that this is, you know, a lifetime appointment. Presidents don't get to make these appointments very often. It's something that got people to the polls. I think in 2016, President Trump talked a lot about it in his campaign. Hillary Clinton did too, that, you know, the next president is going to get to pick justices for the Supreme Court, and obviously the Merrick Garland thing. So we know that this is an issue that people can get behind.
And it I guess connects to a lot of what we've been talking about over the last year with, you know, the Me Too movement and all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's like this common thread and this thought that this could be the year of the woman in politics. And here you have a woman who is saying, Brett Kavanaugh assaulted me and you're not listening to me. And Democrats want to get that message out there. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Republicans have dug in on this and if the question was, will this motivate their base? I would say the answer that I've seen was yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch Twitter during the time that Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh were testifying, the Democratic response during Dr. Ford's testimony was really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Very strong, yeah. Emotional.
When she talked about remembering laughter while she was being assaulted, that struck people, you know, that definitely got Democrats. And you had, at that point, you had some Republicans saying, this whole thing is going to backfire on us. This woman sounds reasonable. This was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then Kavanaugh testifies, and he's kind of yelling during some of it. He tears up during some of it. He's very forceful and saying this is just like, this is a partisan attack and has ruined my life.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans just, man, they were moved by that. You know, initially the response was that this guy's unhinged, he's yelling, and then you look at Republicans, and I mean, we just saw a kind of a sampling of it on Twitter, and mm-hmm. we've got a few of these here. One of the ones that stuck out to me, Eric Erickson, formerly of Red State, and a frequent Trump critic, really, but he's very much in favor of Brett Kavanaugh. Eric Erickson tweets, Kavanaugh is not being withdrawn after this. The Republicans are going to have to confirm him or watch Trump and the GOP voters burn down the remains of the party. Deservedly so. This is an innocent man.
Mm-hmm.
He is retweeted and quoted by a conservative writer, Noah Pollack, says, quote, this is 100% a hill to die on. We could read a lot of quotes like that, a lot of tweets like that.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Jesse Kramer, an outgoing Republican in Madison, calls it a battle between good and evil.
Nothing subtle here.
Not at all. Yeah. And I think I feel like that's set up by those judgment calls that people like Leah Vukmir or Mitch McConnell are making, those calculations on how do we do this. Do we want to be soft here and hope that independent voters come our way? Or do we want to dig in, get this appointment on the court, and get our base fired up?
It seems like they've stuck with the latter calculation.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of making calculations about how to respond to questionable behavior, we can look at what happened this week in Wisconsin with Governor Walker and some revelations about a state representative here, Rob Brooks, and about some comments he made at a caucus event in the Dells, right? Was that where?
That was.
Mm-hmm.
This was a story broken by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel based mm-hmm. on an unidentified source, but it panned out, obviously. Representative Rob Brooks, who is was the assistant majority leader in the state assembly, was, according to the Journal Sentinel, at an assembly Republican event in the Wisconsin Dells and had been drinking. And he said, I'm going to buy drinks for everyone, but then says to Representative Jesse Rodriguez, except Jesse because she's Hispanic.
And then proceeds to not buy her a drink. Several other people drinks.
The Journal Sentinel also reported that that Representative Brooks made sexual remarks to Representatives Cindy Duco and Amy Loudenbeck, though they did not specify what those were.
Mm-hmm.
This was all apparently reported to the Assembly Chief Clerk. And the three of them felt like it had been dealt with prior to this coming out in the news.
Right. They actually released a statement after all this came out when the Journal Sentinel reported it, saying that they were really pleased with how it had been handled. It had been, as you mentioned, reported to leadership. And then Representative Brooks had apologized, after the urging of leadership. And they kind of were ready to put it behind them. But after this report came out, that's not what happened. The governor actually called for Brooks to resign, which is a pretty, obviously, that's the strongest reaction he could have, right?
It is, and he doesn't do that with everybody, and this is something that was pointed out by Democrats. This was Tony Pelez, a top aide to Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling. He said on Twitter, quote, despite multiple reports of sexual assault and misconduct against Trump and Kavanaugh, Walker still supports them 100%. Why the double standard? Referencing the fact that in these kind of higher stakes things, when when the president says stuff, Walker's not calling for him to step down. But in the case of Rob Brooks, this news came out, and hours later, the governor is calling for Representative Brooks to resign.
I mean, and that's a calculation on his part to call for his resignation, right?
He
has to decide what his response is and what the different responses to his response would be.
Right. It's a game of chess responses.
Right.
I mean,
obviously we can't speculate as to whether or not, you know, how much of a political calculation it is versus how much of a genuine reaction it is. We're not in a position to say that.
Absolutely. But he is everything he does now, he has to weigh against his campaign in less than 2 months. Polls are showing him down. You know, he's got other fish to fry, so to speak. And so if he's being asked for a comment or just wants to chime in on Representative Brooks, what's he going to do? In this case, you have to think about what he's actually calling for here. If Representative Brooks were to resign, the governor is saying he's okay with Assembly Republicans not having that seat because there is a Democrat running against Representative Brooks, and that Democrat would be elected.
Mm-hmm.
Assembly GOP leadership had different calculations to make and had a different response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's hard to frame these things, as John was saying, like as strictly political or not. We don't want to paint it in a certain way, but
we're not in their brains, you know?
No, but I think it's undeniable that anything that's done less than 2 months before an election is looked at through a political lens by people who are reading about this or, you know, hearing about it. And so the governor made a decision about how he wants to be publicly seen on issues like this and responding to things like this. And I think that it was more public, obviously, now and in this time, because Assembly leadership dealt with it a while ago. So it was not in the same time, and it wasn't, you know, the same proximity to the election. And it also wasn't as public,
right,
too. So there are a lot of factors at play there. And also, I think to mention, you know, it would essentially give the seat to Democrats. But Republicans have such a large majority in the assembly.
They do. So that's kind of a factor for them. What other factors does, say, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss have to weigh as he decides whether he wants to take a stand like the governor? Well, Robin Voss answers to his caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And if the caucus legitimately feels like, and these three legislators feel like the issue is dealt with, Robin Voss is in a different position. He works for them. And if they think it's done,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's in a different position on whether, you know, to call for Brooks' resignation. Now, Brooks did come out and resign his leadership position, mm-hmm. but he is still a state legislator. And as of this recording, there's no indication that he's going to change his mind on that. There was one other calculation in all this that I thought was interesting. I mean, mm-hmm. there was the Tony Pelley's reaction there, but I didn't hear Democrats in a big way digging in on this. I didn't hear them going out and saying, Representative Brooks must resign, you know, and like echoing that. I didn't hear that at all.
Well, I think that we also, just to mention, should probably put this in the context that Democrats had a similar issue come up where a member of their caucus was accused of sexual misconduct. Representative Josh Zepnik was accused of making inappropriate comments and doing inappropriate things with political peers at a Democratic event. And their response, that party's response, was to call for his resignation and stripping him of his committee assignments.
Right.
So their Republicans did have in their recent memory, this is how Democrats reacted to it. And I think that that has sort of become a dynamic between the two parties, you know, who has the moral high ground on the issue of sexual harassment or the Me Too movement, who's handling this better, who's, you know, who has more purity. And so I think that that's something that is part of that calculation.
In this case, there is the added factor that if they don't exactly need to jump in when Governor Walker is doing it for them in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more potent when it comes from the
right.
Republican governor than, oh, it's Democrats and Republicans fighting again. It's like, no, when Walker does it, it does call a bit more attention to the issue.
Well, at the risk of losing our listeners' attention, I've made the calculation that it's time to wrap this podcast up.
Good
Sean
decision.
Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
And a special thanks to the Capitol Refrigerator.
I can save you from having to do any of the calculations yourself and just tell you right now that it's a good idea to subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes and get new ones almost every single week. You can also find the show on Google and Stitcher, as well as many other podcasting apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime you like at wpr.org/politics.